I'm Jeremy Barron, and this is Cult Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Europa League winners, Atletico Madrid, and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, SB Nation's home for all things Atletico. My guest on this edition of Cult Gennaro Chat is Spanish football journalist Ewan McTeer. Ewan McTeer is the guest on this edition of Cult Gennaro Chat. The preseason has begun. Atletico just completing their International Champions Cup obligations in Singapore. And while we do care about the preseason, we really do, it's not the focus of today's episode. Yes, we are going to talk about Atletico's last-second loss to PSG on Monday. But there's lots of transfer business to get to, and lots of Cult Gennaro Chat amigo questions from patreon.com/cultgennarochat. Such as, will Yelson Martins be worth all the fuss his old club are kicking up over him? How will Atletico line up next season with their remodeled attack? Can Gabby's locker room presence be replaced? All that and more on this edition of the program. Before we launch on into this post-vacation episode of Cult Gennaro Chat, a couple reminders for you. Make sure to subscribe and listen to this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. That includes Apple Podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and review. It would really help us out. Gets more eyes and ears on the show. And, I mentioned it earlier, you can become a Cult Gennaro Chat amigo at patreon.com/cultgennarochat from as little as $3 a month. $3 a month will get you several benefits, including the weekly bonus podcast, of which there may be one this week, but there will definitely be one next week. Definitely a bonus podcast with Rob Walker next week. In the meantime, though, you can check out the other rewards for yourself. Patreon.com/cultgennarochat. We'll be back with Ewan McTeer after this. I was just reading before we started recording just now. There's a new network that's broadcasting a Champions League and Europa League in the U.S. And they moved it off Fox Sports. They're moving it to Turner Sports. So that includes Bleacher Report and all the Turner Sports networks. The only Europa League game they're broadcasting for free next year is the final.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, yeah, 46 Champions League games. The rest you got to pay for through a separate, like, streaming package. And it's kind of absurd.
Yeah, that's not very exciting, but, you know, that's the way it's going. I mean, I know back in the UK, they just sold the La Liga rights. It's not on Sky Sports, and now it's all online, but La Liga starts a few weeks, and no one knows how this online system's going to work. I think it's 11 Sports is the company, and nobody knows what their plan is for how they're going to distribute it, which is a bit strange.
I think a lot of people are just going to be streaming the matches. Just a lot of online streaming.
Yeah, well, if there's no other option for people, then, you know, what are you going to do?
Nothing they can do. It's really weird, and it's threatening to set the sport back, at least in this country, for sure. Because with Fox, we had a lot more free viewing, obviously, but they just showed more anyway. It's really kind of sad.
Yeah, no, I'm just hoping to get along to a few more games this year and take it in there. I mean, 5 Madrid teams in La Liga is really exciting. So.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. It's super exciting. We're going to start with PSG and Atletico, that friendly in Singapore on Monday. Full disclosure, I did not watch the entire game because kickoff was at 4:30 my time, and I had just gotten back from vacation the night before. So, Ewan, did you watch more of this game than I did?
Not all of it, but maybe more than you did. I had it on in the background, and it was sort of interesting again. I mean, following on from the first one, the penalty shootout victory, I mean, this was, once again, another sort of exciting game. I mean, Atletico showed some resolve, came back a couple of times, and a last-minute winner, not for Atletico, last-minute winner for PSG, but it was, as far as preseason friendlies go, this was one of the more exciting ones I've seen this summer.
Yeah, I guess that's all you can ask for from these games, is that at least they be exciting. At least they be fun to watch. And this one was, from what I saw, it was pretty fun to watch. Victor Moriejo scoring the first of Atletico's 2 goals as they fought back from a 2-0 deficit to equalize very late on before PSG scored an even later winner. It was a really nice goal that won them the match, though. I want to say Pistolaccio is his name?
I'm going to leave you with the pronunciation. I don't think I'm going to be able to do any better than that. Let's say that.
Okay. He's Romanian. That's about all I know. But he scored a very nice goal. But I think the biggest story from this game comes from the younger players, the academy kids, the teenagers that Simeone played most of the match. A lot of the older guard or the current crop, the current core of this Atletico team, a lot of them were hooked around the hour between halftime and around the hour mark. And a lot of the Canteranos came on again, and they acquitted themselves very well. They had a very strong couple games there in Singapore.
Yeah, they really did, and it was, you know, once the younger guys came on that Atletico maybe looked a little bit better. And to be fair, I mean, PSG brought on a lot of their younger guys as well, but yeah, not just Mollejo with his goal, but, you know, some of the guys in midfield, and especially in defence. I mean, almost all of the back line was made up with young guys, Canteranos, because so many of Atletico's World Cup participants were defenders. So, I mean, apart from Juan Fran, you didn't really have any of the senior players in the back line. And, you know, sure, they conceded three goals, but they showed some good signs as well. And Adan had his first start for Atletico and shows again that, you know, he's going to be a fairly solid backup to Jan Oblak, which is what Atletico really needed after, surprisingly and for some reason, deciding to get rid of Moya halfway through last season.
Yeah, Adan didn't have any heroics like he did against Arsenal, but I think the Adan signing was one of the stealthier signings in the window and one of the better signings of the window. I think he's such a high quality keeper. You know, last year he was in goal for a Betis team that got back into Europe. So Adan as Oblak's backup on that deal of 1 million euros, I think that's just brilliant business. It's going to continue to go down as brilliant business. But you mentioned Mollejo. And this is a guy who we started to see a little bit last year when he was a 16-year-old. He kind of stood out because, you know, he has no hair, because he has alopecia. But he's also stood out because he's actually a pretty good player, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he really is. I remember, I think it was a friendly against Leganés this time last year in preseason, where he got a start and he turned a lot of, where he caught a lot of attention. And yeah, by all accounts, he's had a good year again in the academies, and he deserves a chance of pre-season, and he's shown that, you know, he's maybe not ready just yet. I expect he'll get some minutes in the early Copa del Rey rounds, but he's shown that, yeah, he's a guy for the future, and it'd be amazing to have a homegrown Atletico striker in a few years when Diego Costa maybe needs a bit more of a break and when he eventually moves on. So It's going to be exciting and going to watch his progress with a lot of optimism, I think.
Yeah, just 17, will be in the B team this year. Probably another year or two away, but you can tell. Yeah. He's already playing at international level for one of the under 21 teams, the under 19 teams. You can tell he just has so much talent, but it'll take another year or two for him to get polished. But I think there really is going to be a place for Mollejo in this team. In the next 2 or 3 years, there really is going to be him and Joaquin Munoz as well, who was one of the stars of the treble-winning juvenile team last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting just to see some academy guys coming through after a little bit of a drought for a few years, and then over the last few years we've had quite a few players, you know, Saul obviously, Thomas Partey, Lucas Hernandez coming through as well. So that's, it's exciting that every year we seem to get, you know, one or two Canteranos coming through and making it into the senior squad, when for the best part of a decade, that just didn't happen.
Yeah, all four of Atletico's central midfielders this season are going to be academy born and bred. And yeah, we just don't see that very often in the game today. So it's pretty interesting. And yeah, Atletico's academy has just really grown since Simeone took over. He hasn't had a direct hand in it, but he's overseen it. A lot of these guys have gotten first-team chances, whether it's in preseason, whether it's in the Copa del Rey. They have gotten chances to show what they can do. And you can tell that the system works as well, because the defense was still relatively organized despite getting hit for three goals. Atletico looked much, much better those last 15, 20 minutes after they fell behind 2-0. That this, again, speaks to the strength of the structure and the strength of the system. And if these players, no matter how young they are, they can come in and execute Simeone's plans, then they will be in contention for they're not going to play big games, but they will be in contention to maybe play a Copa del Rey match here or there. And that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll move on from PSG and Atletico's travails in Singapore. The penalty shootout win over Arsenal, the loss to PSG at the last second. Next friendly is in Stuttgart on August 5th. So we have a few days off between then. Atletico are expected to recover. Saul and Koke, at the very least, I think Godin might play as well, although he just returned to training yesterday.
Yeah, it's good to see them all getting back as well, and I think they all know that there's such a big opportunity to win this UEFA Super Cup against Real Madrid on August 15th, and I think Griezmann has explicitly said so, and I think the rest of them have all sort of privately had the same mindset, which is, you know, we want to take part in this game because it's not that often you get a chance to win a European trophy against Real Madrid, so they realise how big a game this is, and I think the players just want to get back, get into form, get a couple of pre-season friendlies under their belt and be ready for August 15th, which, considering so many guys were in the World Cup final just exactly a month to the day before that match, it'll be a big ask for them to be there, but they seem determined to make it, and that's got to be really positive and uplifting if you're Simeone or a member of the rest of the squad, because it just shows how committed they are to making 2018-19 one of the more memorable seasons.
Exactly. Before the PSG game, we had a pretty interesting revelation, Ewan. Atletico announced that Angel Correa would get the number 10 shirt this season. Also, separate announcements saying Lucas Hernandez would switch to number 21, his shirt number for France. Diego Costa would get his old number 19 back. And Gelson Martins, who was introduced today, will be wearing the number 18. Oh, and Thomas Lamar will get number 11 as well. But the most fascinating shirt number switch, I think it was obviously Correa's. What did you make of it? And what's the significance, if there is any, behind that number 10?
I don't know. I mean, the number 10 has been a little bit cursed in recent years. I mean,
yeah, it has.
The players who have worn it haven't had much success, have had quite a lot of injuries, have had some unceremonious exits, obviously Carrasco being one of them. So I don't know. I mean, Correa, I think he's definitely, if it is a symbol of him being a crucial member, a key member of the squad, then I think Correa has definitely earned it. The number 10 has never been maybe one of Atletico's historic shirts in the same way as it has been at Barcelona, or the same way it has been at Real Madrid. At Atletico, the sort of historic shirts have always been the number 8, which was Aragonés, or the number 14, which is now just been taken up by Rodri and previously worn by Gabi and Simeone, and you know, number 7 has been quite special as well. So number 10 has never had that much historical significance at Atletico Madrid, but still a big thing for Correa on a personal level, and I think it shows that he's very much a part of Simeone's plans, and I think he really deserves it. I mean, last year certain points he was the one who stepped up, and he had a record season in terms of his goals, but more importantly, so many of his goals were the first goal or the only goal of a game. So in terms of the points that he actually won for Atletico last season, it was quite a significant total. So this is just the next step in Correa's Atletico career, and he's more than earned it, I think.
Last season, despite his inconsistencies, I think he did take a step forward. It wasn't the leap forward I think some of us were expecting, but he played a lot more. He did score a few big goals. The one against Valencia in that huge game in February stands out. He did have those inconsistent patches again. He'd had those dry spells, but I think he matured. He wasn't so petulant, wouldn't pick up silly yellow cards like he did in years past. It's interesting that he gets the 10, because there was talk that Lemar was going to get it when he was confirmed from Monaco. And it sets up, I think, a pretty interesting battle for playing time between Lemar, Correa, Vitolo, and Gelson.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, from the situation Atletico found themselves in February time after they sold half the squad to the Chinese Super League, this is the exact opposite. They've got depth, and I've seen some people sort of talk about that as a problem. You know, how are all these players going to be satisfied with their playing time? But we saw that the opposite problem was probably more severe, where they just didn't have enough players to cover the positions. So Atletico desperately needed depth, especially in the sort of wide positions, if Simeone wants to use more natural wingers. And, you know, they brought in a couple guys, and beforehand, they didn't really have any. They had Vitolo and Correa, who was playing there, but he's not naturally a winger. Or Koke was playing there. He's not naturally a winger. So, yeah, they've added two wingers in one summer, but that's because they were so short at that position that it was basically a necessity.
Yeah, Anders Sorensen from our Colchonero chat Patreon page, he wonders kind of the same thing. Is there going to be game time for all these very capable midfielders and forwards? He mentioned the same thing I just did. Lemar, Vitolo, Gelson, and Correa are going to be fighting for the same spot. Do you think that we will see more lineups with two wingers and only two central midfielders? And if so, who of the central midfielders, who's going to miss out?
Well, I think the obvious one in terms of who's going to miss out is Gabby, the guy who's left.
Right.
So, I mean, the fact that he's gone, obviously everybody's talking about how Rodri can be the next Gabby, and Thomas Partey has so much potential as well. But we have to remember, both those guys are quite young, and I don't expect them to be starting every game this season. So you take Gabby, you take a really experienced central midfielder out, and you add in some of these wingers, and obviously that requires a bit of a tactical shift. But the reports from Singapore that Simeone's been trying out a 4-3-3 formation. He, towards the end of last season, used three at the back, he played with wing back. So it seems that the sort of 4-4-2 with four central midfielders in the middle is going to become less of a thing this season. And yeah, I mean, it's maybe going to be more of a thing of the players who get selected week in, week out will be the ones who fit that week's system, rather than the ones who are being rotated or who are preferred or whatever. So, I mean, all these players have different attributes, different things they can bring to the table, and depending on how Simeone sets his team up each week, some of them are going to get a start and the other ones are going to take a week out because the other guy that's next to them is better equipped to do the job Simeone wants.
I think you're definitely going to see that in central midfield. There's one of the guys who I think may lose out on some time is Tomas. As great as he was last year, Rodri's come in to be the Gabby replacement. Everything that we've heard from preseason has said that Simeone and the coaching staff are extremely impressed with Rodri to this point. They're impressed with him physically, how he's adapting tactically, and it's really nothing that Tomas has done or hasn't done. It's just that Rodri's come in here as the Gabby replacement, and he might be a better fit some weeks. As far as any of the wingers, I mean, it's hard to say right now because we haven't seen any of them suit up yet. I mean, they're just getting introduced. I mean, Lamar was yesterday. Gelson was today, so it's kind of hard to say. But for me, Tomas is a guy who is gonna lose out here. But we'll see. Simeone really could just do it on a partido a partido basis, like in the old days. He does have more depth than last year, which is huge because last season got pretty rough by the end there, when it felt like Simeone had 12 players to choose from.
Yeah, it really did, and especially if Atletico aspire to go far in Europe this year and get as close to the final, Champions League final at the Wanda as possible, maybe even get to have a wee run in the Copa del Rey as well. I mean, they're going to need all these players, and I don't think anyone's going to be too dissatisfied by the end of the season if Atletico can put a European run together, because they're going to end up playing something close to 55-60 games, and there's going to be enough playing time for everybody. There's going to be injuries, there's going to be suspensions, and yeah, I think players are going to, some players will always want more minutes, but I don't think there's going to be a situation where one player is left out especially more than the rest. And yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's going to be an interesting thing for Simeone to balance, because for the last few years he hasn't had this much depth, and it's maybe been a little bit easier to keep everybody happy with playing time, but this season is going to be tricky. Especially one case I think is going to be very interesting is Lucas Hernandez, because the guy just won the World Cup as potentially, some would say, the best left back in the tournament, if not the best, one of the maybe top three in the tournament, and he's not necessarily a starter for Atletico Madrid. I mean, he doesn't really play right back, and we'll get into the right back developments I'm sure in a little bit, but centre back you've got Godin, you've got Savic, you've got Jimenez. Does he start ahead of them? I don't know. And then at left back, you've got Felipe Luis, who, when he's, you know, back and healthy, does he start ahead of Felipe Luis? He probably still doesn't. So it's going to be interesting to see how much time Hernandez, who's had just a fantastic 2018, it's going to be interesting to see how much time he gets, because he deserves it. But at this Atletico defence, it's hard to break yourself in.
Yeah, the Lucas situation, I think is possibly the most interesting positional thing in this team. He just won the World Cup as France's starting left back, and how do you take him out of the 11? How do you take him out of the team at all? I just don't see it. I think he starts ahead of Felipe, honestly. I
think he might at the start of the season because, I mean, obviously that injury Felipe Luis had, I mean, he really came back from that early to make it to the World Cup, but there's no way he can be 100% right now after something like that, after a busy summer. So I wouldn't be surprised if the playing time there split fairly evenly at the start of the season, and then if it just becomes a case of whoever's in better form. But we have to remember, when Felipe Luis was playing last season, I mean, he was at times the best Atletico player. I know he's getting on a little bit in age, but last season when he was available and healthy, he didn't really seem to show any signs of slowing down. He had one of his best first halves of the season in a long time. So it's going to be interesting to see who displaces who, because it's two very good left backs, which over in the right back situation is maybe a bit different.
Yeah, yes it is, and we'll get to that in just a second. Trace Gatos asks what we think the preferred formation is going to be. He's hoping for a 4-3-3 or maybe a Christmas tree formation, which is basically a 4-3-3. It seems like it's going to be a 4-3-3, but I would love to see this team go three at the back. They have the personnel to do it. They have three center backs who need to play every week, pretty much. And they're going to have the personnel. And I think the other advantage of going 3-5-2 is that Felipe doesn't have to work as hard defensively, assuming you start him at wing back. And then whoever comes in to replace for Salco, which it looks like it's going to be Santiago Arias, he doesn't have to worry too much about defensive responsibilities as well, because you have three just hoovers back there at center back.
Hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, all of these situations, these systems would sort of make sense, and that's the great thing about this squad, is there's so much flexibility now tactically.
Yeah.
So I think generally it might still be a 4-4-2, but with more wingers rather than central midfielders put out wide. And if they get further forward, then it starts to look something like a 4-2-3-1 with Griezmann as your sort of number 10 floating around just behind Costa, and with the two wingers quite high up. And then you've got two central midfielders. Take your pick. Any of the fantastic central midfielders Atletico now have in the squad, and put them as a sort of central two. And you've got a system that on paper looks like it makes a lot of sense and looks like it should work, as long as the wingers can really track back when they're asked of it. And, you know, given the comments from everyone so far, it sounds like they're ready to put in the shift. I mean, Lamar was saying at his presentation, if I have to run more at Atletico, then I will. And that's exactly what I think Simeone wants to hear.
Yeah, that's exactly what he wants to hear. And Gelson's going to do the same thing, you can bet.
Yeah, it's the opposite, basically, of what Arda Turan used to say. So so this is a step in a different direction.
Absolutely, or Carrasco.
Yeah, that also.
Let's talk about the right back situation. We've intimated it a couple times. What's going on there? Shimi Rusalko is leaving. That is just about certain at this point. Both Spanish and Italian reports saying that it's going to be a loan move to Inter, an initial loan fee of $6.5 million with a compulsory option to buy next season of $17.5 million. So bringing the total cost of the transfer to $24 million. It'll be consummated next summer. Ewan, what are your thoughts on this?
I don't know. I mean, so the reports are that Arias is going to be the one coming in.
Yep.
Santiago Arias, Colombian right back. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to pretend I know exactly how good Arias would be in at Atletico Madrid, but Versalco just never really seemed to fit in. There was constant talk of him not being comfortable, of him wanting away. And then there were a few really silly moments towards the end of last season, not least the 9-minute red card in the first leg against Arsenal, which really put the Europa League campaign at risk. And it still amazes me how Atletico were able to survive that 80 minutes at the Emirates with 10 men and come through with a result to take into the second leg. So I think, and then at the Europa League final as well, I mean, you got a silly yellow card in the first half and Simeone brought on Juanfran at half time, and I think he's maybe just had a bit too many chances. And he's as good a player as he is, and as good as he was at the World Cup, I think he's just shown a bit of indiscipline, maybe both on the pitch and in terms of all this transfer talk off the pitch. And Atletico Madrid, that just doesn't hold.
Yeah, the Versalco leaving is great news for your boy Juanfran, for sure.
Well, as long as he's a starter again, I'll be excited about that.
All that matters. But yeah, I think the argument for the Vrsaljko argument for me, it begins and ends with he played little to no role in Atletico's three biggest games of the season last year. Sent off in the first leg against Arsenal, didn't play the second leg, which Atletico won, and played half the final before he came off and Juan Fran entered the second half. Vrsaljko, yeah, he just never really fit here, and I think people kind of got wrapped up in his World Cup, because he did have a very good World Cup, especially in the knockouts, and especially against England in particular. He stood out in that match. But Who Scored ran a stat this morning that I think is very illuminating. Of the 57 players to attempt 75 or more crosses in La Liga last season, only Jesus Navas had a worse success rate than Vrsaljko.
Yeah, and
not
with
great.
Croatia, I mean, we saw how good his crossing was with Croatia, but you have to look at the guys he was putting the ball into for the Croatia team, and at Atletico, you just don't really have that. You've got Costa, who, as good a player as he is and as good a battler as he is, he's not necessarily the guy who's going to leap, you know, 3 meters into the air and get his head on the cross. So Vrsaljko is you know, he's got certain attributes, certain skill set, but it just maybe didn't work with Atletico Madrid. And I think going forward, with the way we've just talked about how Atletico might be evolving their system, it seems like his skill set becomes even less relevant to a team like Atletico Madrid if they're going to play as we've just been suggesting they might do in this season.
He never really seemed a perfect fit there, and he couldn't, you know, he had two seasons, granted he did have one major injury, his ACL injury, but he had two seasons to beat out Juan Fran and convincingly make the case that he should be Atletico's number one right back, and he couldn't do it. That's a problem. And I know Simeone said he wanted to keep him, he said he was important, and this was board driven, and I do think the board should have gotten more money for him, especially after the World Cup he had. But I don't have a huge issue with selling Vrsaljko. I don't think it was going to get a whole lot better for him. And he never really showed the same commitment and the drive for Atletico as he did for Croatia. I just never felt he did. He missed a bunch of games with minor injuries. Just his form was really erratic. And I don't really have an issue with him getting sold. I have an issue with the fee being kind of low, especially when Atletico haven't made any money this summer from player sales. That's kind of my biggest issue with it, and how good Arias is going to be, because I haven't watched much of him either.
Yeah, that's the thing, and you have to hope that the replacement that comes in is of a similar level, and if he is of a similar level but comes in with a sort of better attitude, a better willingness to adapt to the Atletico style, to do what Simeone wants, then you know, it's a upgrade then. And, you know, even just the language thing could be one thing. I mean, Arias coming in as a Colombian, joining that very South American back line. I mean, this could be a problem. Maybe he's just going to have better chemistry with the likes of Godin and Jimenez and the guys in front of him. Whereas Vrsaljko maybe just struggled to build that chemistry with guys from a very different culture, guys speaking a different language. And, yeah, it just never really seemed to fit, and time to move on. And if you can, yeah, the fee maybe is a little bit low, but I suppose the Serie A transfer window isn't open quite as long as the Spanish one, so maybe it was a case of needing to pull the trigger sooner rather than later. And so yeah, he's off, and it's a new year at right back.
From what I've seen about Arias, I mean, he was the Eredivisie Player of the Year last year, very attack oriented, really compliments wingers well. And that could work in the more offensive system that Simeone is planning. Haven't seen or heard much of his defensive abilities, but I mean, Vrsaljko wasn't great there either. So depending on the fee, Arias is apparently already in Madrid. His signing could be made official tomorrow or Thursday, which is pretty crazy. Like, Atletico have done a good job getting the replacement in and not letting this drag out to the end of the window. So they deserve some plaudits for that. It's still very strange what's going on here with Vrsaljko. He just never really caught on. And despite some really good periods of form, he just renewed his contract in February, and now he's leaving. So really kind of strange what has happened with him. But if Arias comes in and does well, he was a key part of a PSV side that, you know, was in a Champions League round of 16 a couple years ago before they lost to Atletico. Three-time Eredivisie champions in the last 4 years. He's been part of a successful side, so he can replicate that at Atletico. I don't think many people are going to mind.
Yeah, and Atletico, we have to keep in mind, chances are he's going to improve. I mean, Diego Simeone seems to improve most players, and I mean, we saw how many Atletico players had a great World Cup. So if he can come in, work with Simeone, and get even better than he already is just now, then yeah, it's something to be optimistic about. And even if it does take a little bit of time to adapt, even if he's not got the hang of it straight away, then you do have Juan Fran, whose legs are pretty gone. But Juan Fran is one of the most experienced right backs in La Liga now, so the drop off isn't going to be too dramatic if you sort of hand the keys to Juan Fran for the first couple of months of the season and bring Arias in slowly.
Joaquin on our Patreon page asks a couple questions. I saw some reports that Atletico were looking to sign Giovanni Simeone, and I wanted to know what you guys thought about that. I personally don't watch that much Serie A, but I've heard good things about him and saw that he scored a good amount of goals last season. What do you think about Sporting demanding $40 million so they take down their complaint to FIFA about the Gelson signing? Which one do you want to start with?
Yeah. Let's go chronological. Let's go with the first one.
Okay.
With the Giovanni Simeone one, I just don't think it would be a good look if Simeone signs his son. We sort of saw some of the problems that this had at Real Madrid last year when you had Lucas Zidane in the squad and all of the controversy when he was given that game right at the end against Villarreal to start ahead of Keylor Navas and Kiko Casilla. And if he had a different surname and it was the last game of the season and you're Real Madrid and you're probably coming third and you've got a Champions League final coming up, maybe you do give the third choice goalkeeper a run out. But the fact that he had a surname that was the same as the coach's surname, the fact that they are related, basically opened that decision up to all sorts of criticism. And there were reports of a dressing room bust-up between players because of this, which were then denied. And it just was a very messy situation. So I feel like if Giovanni Simeone did come into Atletico Madrid, as good as he might be, everything he does is going to be viewed differently. Yeah, I mean, it's just, he might be a very good player, but you're just, when your dad's a coach and he's giving you a start over someone else, that opens you up to a lot of conflict. So I don't think that would be a very good fit. I don't know what you make of that.
It's, in theory, it'd be pretty cool to see Cholo coaching Cholito. But Fiorentina are demanding in excess of $40 million, and Atletico just don't really have that money right now because they've already spent over $100 in this window. But other than that, I mean, little Simeone is pretty good, young, a little unpolished from what I've seen, but still good, but not an automatic starter. I don't think you would pay upwards of $40 million for a kid who's going to sit on the bench for a year or two. And the same kind of thing as you mentioned, I agree with. It could open Simeone up to all this about why is your son playing, why isn't your son playing. It could turn into a distraction that the team doesn't really need. So I would rather not do it. But we'll see what comes of it. Atletico are still looking for a backup number 9, most likely to be Nikola Kalinic as of this moment. But we'll see. It would be fun, mostly theoretically though, rather than in practice.
Yeah, and that's true. If the fee is too much, then besides the potential nepotism, you've also got a fee that is maybe just stripping that away and looking at the player. Maybe the fee is a bit too much, and you could get someone else out there for a smaller fee, or even keep one of the guys you have with Gamero or Vieto, who both seem on their way out of the club but have had decent pre-seasons. And if you're going to be selling one of them for a small fee and then forking out a massive amount for someone else, then is that really the wisest move? It's a bit of a messy situation, and I don't think it would be a good fit.
The Gelson case is also very interesting.
Very messy as well.
Yeah, this was kind of the hesitation I had in signing any of the players who rescinded their contracts at Sporting after the Ultras attack. This was kind of the worry I had, was that Sporting would just throw a fit and they would demand all kinds of money. The latest is that Sporting insists that Gelson's contract renewed automatically the week before he left. How convenient. His release clause went up to $100 million, apparently, and that is the fee that Sporting are demanding from Atletico to complete the Gelson transfer, which has already been completed. And a couple days ago, there was a separate report issued through Sporting channels that They would, if Atletico would just pay them $40 million, and they'll drop the case. Just pay us $40 million, and we'll drop it. Which, this is just Sporting kicking up a lot of dust about nothing. Like, you need to protect your players. Your players didn't feel protected. They rescinded their contracts. End of story.
Yeah, that's the thing, and it's, you know, it would, from Sporting's point of view, it would maybe be a bit of neglect to their own interests and their own fans if they didn't pursue this case, if they just assumed they weren't going to get any money from it. So, I mean, they're basically doing what they have to do, and the players did what they had to do, and the clubs that have purchased and picked up these players have done what they had to do given the situation the market presented to them. So, I mean, basically everybody has acted in their own interest, as they probably should. And yeah, there's going to be a legal case, and we'll see how it goes. There's the good thing from Atletico's point of view is that there are a number of other clubs who are in similar situations, have picked up players in a similar manner. So yeah, it's going to be up to FIFA to decide if these players had the right to rescind their contracts for something like that, and if the clubs were able to just pick up the rights for nothing. Probably in the end, you're going to come to a case where a settlement is agreed, where Atletico and all these other clubs pay something to Sporting, which is, you know, far below the market evaluation of these players, but is also more than nothing. And I think Atletico probably expected that would be the case, because by all accounts they were trying to negotiate to pay some sort of compensatory fee to Sporting in the first place. They said no, so I think Atletico's mindset was, well, if we have to legally pay a similar fee to what we offered, then, you know, it's just a different way, different roundabout way of getting to the same stage.
Quickly now, before we wrap up the show, let's talk about the fixture list that came out last week while I was on vacation. Very interesting stuff here. Atletico starting the season at Mestalla. Like, that's going to be fun.
On a Monday night.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time Atletico played on a Monday. It's been a while.
Yeah, well, the Monday thing, I think, is based on them being in Estonia, playing the Super Cup.
Yeah.
UEFA Super Cup in the previous Wednesday night, I think it is. So you've got to be pleased with that, I think, because a trip to Valencia just a few days after a big game like that would be really, really tough. So if they can play that on the Monday, I think, for once, it's a benefit maybe to Atletico, and for Atletico fans, at least it's not their home game that is put on a more awkward night. So but that's a very tough start. But we have to remember, when they won the league in 2013-14, they had to go to the Sanchez-Pizjuan first game and play Sevilla, and they destroyed them. They won 3-1. And I think that's one of the positives that Atletico Madrid usually have at the start of the season, is because, you know, Profi Ortega is so good at what he does, they usually hit the ground running just that little bit harder than the other teams. I mean, they drew the first game of last season 2-2 with Girona, but that was partly because of a couple of defensive lapses, and then the referee deciding not to give Griezmann a penalty that was a penalty, and instead deciding to send them off for calling the referee a cagón. So that was a slightly different situation for Atletico Madrid. But yeah, normally they start a season quite well because the squad is just so fit. So maybe this is a good thing to play Valencia so early. Maybe I don't imagine Valencia are very excited about this.
I'm excited. It's going to be fun. How often do you get two Champions League sides?
In terms of Valencia, if they could pick a time to host Atletico Madrid and hope to squeeze a point or three out of it, I don't think they would pick the first week.
That's true. That is true. Atletico will open their home slate against Rayo on match day 2. Robbie's going to be so excited. And a bunch of mini Madrid derbies, Getafe in week 5, the Madrid derby on match day 7, a bit earlier than in previous years this time around. It'll be a September Madrid derby rather than a November Madrid derby. Leganés away on match day 11, hosting Barcelona on match day 13. That's going to be a huge game, because it seems to me that those are going to be the two teams fighting for the title this year. And it's hard to get much deeper than that, because we still haven't had the Champions League draw, and we can't get much further than that. A couple more questions before we sign off here. Another one from Trace Gatos. Ewan, I think you'd know the answer to this one. He says he's been to some of the bigger stadiums in Spain for Atleti matches. This year the plan is going to Atleti away to Girona. Unfortunately, he's unable to find a match day scarf of the two teams playing that day outside the stadium and buy one as a keepsake for his game room at home. Do the smaller teams like Girona even do that with the match day scarf, with the two teams playing that day on it?
Quite rarely. I've not seen it as much at the smaller teams. I mean, the smaller teams have far less merchandise to begin with, which is logical. And yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's mostly only when they play Barcelona or Real Madrid that they even seem to bother, and you know, maybe some clubs would bother with Atletico Madrid as well, but yeah, I've not seen very much half and half scarfage at the smaller stadiums. It tends to be at the Bernabeu or the Camp Nou that you see stuff like that, just because they have more guys trying to compete with each other and they've got to come up with more creative things to sell. So yeah, maybe he didn't miss out on that half and half scarf. Maybe it just didn't exist.
Finally, Sporting Heejun. Every time I see Gabby looking so happy on Instagram, two things happen. One, I die a little more inside. And two, I wonder what his departure will mean to the demeanor of the team in the locker room. I know he had lost a step, but I still can't help but feel he was a critical veteran voice that kept the team on track. Can he really be replaced by anyone on the current squad? Ewan, I know you're going to say Wanfran. First off.
Oh, no. Wanfran replaced Gabby as the leader, the de facto captain of Atletico a long time ago. No, I think Saul can be that voice, but that's more of a long-term thing, and I think it's a really good point that's brought up. I think, you know, we might underestimate, as much as, you know, Gabby and Fernando Torres might not have had too much more to offer at this level from a playing sense, we shouldn't underestimate how big a factor their leadership has been for the last few years. And to lose not one, but two club legends in one summer, and to replace them with, admittedly, better, more talented footballers at this stage in their careers, but not necessarily leaders. It's going to be interesting. And yeah, the guys like Diego Rodin are really going to have to step up. And you know, Griezmann as well, I think, is having committed, seemingly, to Atletico for the near future. Maybe he can now take some of a leadership role. And you've got Diego Costa as well. I think some of these other guys that weren't necessarily obvious leaders in the last few seasons, they're going to really have to step up, because yeah, it's not just Gabby that's gone, it's Fernando Torres as well, and I think that's really massive.
In the short term, it's got to be Godín and Wanfran, because those are guys who have been here the longest, who have been with Cholo since the beginning. Koke as well.
Yeah, but Felipe Luis as well, I think.
Felipe too.
Has a big role to play.
That's right. But yeah, those three guys, Godín, Wanfran, Felipe to an extent, those are the guys who are going to have to step up and be the voices in the dressing room. And Godín's going to be named the next captain here like any day now that he's back at training. Medium to long term, it's going to be Koke and or Saul. Probably, I think Saul's a really good shout.
Yeah, I mean Koke obviously a little bit older, but I think Saul just has that aura about him, that he's just a bit more vocal than Koke, a bit more I think he just shows all of the qualities that a real leader, a real captain has. And not to take anything away from Koke, because Koke can certainly be that sort of leader as well, but I think Saul just has it all, really, and he's going to be Mr. Atletico for a long time to come.
Well, we will end it there. Ewan, thank you so much for your time, as ever. Always great to talk to you.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Follow Ewan on Twitter at emcteer, and buy Hijacking La Liga on Amazon. It's been available in the States since April. It's a fantastic read, Hijacking La Liga. You can follow me on Twitter at jbbaron. You can follow Into the Calderon on Twitter at Into the Calderon. Like ITC on Facebook as well at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. Subscribe and listen to Colch Narrow Chat on your favorite podcasting platform. And don't forget to become a Colch Narrow Chat amigo at patreon.com/ColchNarrowChat. We'll be back next week. Until then, adios.